We're joined by the CEO of Southern Illinois Healthcare, Rex Budde. Hi, Rex. How are you this morning, pal?
I'm well, Tom. How are you, my friend?
Good, good, good. But you and I have a lot of numbers to talk about today. And I want to start this morning, Rex. I know I want to make sure I've got the numbers right this morning, but these numbers that I'm looking at from the SIH system appear to be the highest numbers that I have seen when it comes to hospitalizations. What have you got for us this morning when it comes to hospitalizations at SIH?
Yeah, currently we have, and you are correct, Tom, it is the highest numbers we've seen through this pandemic. We have 50 patients, 23 at Heron and 27 at Memorial in the hospital right now with that are COVID positive.
And two inpatients waiting for positive results to boot.
Right. Yeah, we have two that are we're holding to see what their results are on their tests. So that's 52 patients that we're currently caring for.
Some people may recognize the term triage. It was primarily a medical term. You're on the battlefield, and you save the people you can save, and you categorize them. And I'm starting to think of that phrase in a more contemporary sense, but in a different context. Yes, you help the ones that need the help. You go and you do everything you can for the ones most severely injured, right, the sickest in this case. But triage also is about the resources you have available to treat those people. I'm starting to think of it in two contexts now.
You know, that's a great perspective, because one of the things that we are, you know, we've done, gosh, by the end of the week, it'll be 60,000 tests, or darn near 60,000 tests. And we've had about 4,400 folks who are positive. And, you know, in the region, gosh, we've had 14,000 positives. One of the things that we are seeing, and this is a tough message, so I want to try to get this right. Just because you get a positive result doesn't mean you have to run to the ED. And we're getting folks who, they get a positive result, zip right to the ED. They're not symptomatic, or they have very light symptoms. Go to the ED if you feel your health is in danger and needs that level of care. You get a positive result, you feel okay or just minor symptoms, but you're worried, contact your primary care doctor. Like you're saying, triage to the appropriate level. It doesn't help the really sick people if we swamp the EDs with folks who, gosh, I got a positive test, what happens now? If you have a positive test, or you know what, regardless, positive, negative test, if you feel like, you know, you're in serious health risk, then get to an ED. But don't go just because you got the positive result. You've always got your primary care doc. They know you better than anybody, and that's a great place to start in on this, you know, COVID journey, if you will, or, you know, the illness pattern or what have you.
Yeah, I mean, they know your other health and underlying health issues and give you guidance on that once you've gotten that test. But to back that up, of course, Rex was talking about the numbers. Look at this. Look at it this way. 12,623 new positive cases, a single day record in the state of Illinois, out of 104,955 tests, and only so 12,600, they didn't all run to the hospital and go to the emergency departments. 4,742 are in hospital, 911 in ICUs, and 399 on vents. If every single person that had a positive case was in the hospital, there would be talking a different story here, right?
We'd be out of business. I mean, we would be locked up, and we wouldn't be able to care for really sick people. So we still do see some folks who, and I get that, people are scared if they get that test because of everything they've seen and they've read. So I appreciate that, and I'm not being critical. I'm just trying to give some, you know, some good advice that base your judgment on what to do next based on how you feel and what your symptoms are.
All right. What word would you describe the status right now of the healthcare system? Well, two words here. We'll look at two words, two different categories. How about this, Rex? The status of the healthcare system in Southern Illinois and the status of the region. What words would you use to describe our current situation, knowing what we know now and the numbers you and I just discussed?
We're managing it. Would be a term. People are incredibly stressed. The staff is. You know, if you know a healthcare worker, someday give them a hug. You can't do that right now because they're under a lot of, you know, they're under a lot of pressure. They never get to escape this thing. 50 inpatients with COVID consumes a lot of resources. And for every patient, the staff has to gown and mask and do all these things that they got to do. It just makes it more emotionally draining and what have you. A number of the smaller outlying hospitals, You know, they're not hit nearly as hard because most of that stuff's coming into the bigger centers, so, you know, ours and up in Mount Vernon and what have you. But and the bigger centers are, you know, they're busy. They're really, really, really busy.
So how, what word did you describe Region 5 as a whole with what you know? What word would you use there?
You know, a word would be teetering.
I think.
And, you know, what I mean by that simply is we have seen, we're up to 8% positive rate, you know, run rate on our tests. And, you know, it's where, and we're seeing the growth, Tom, in the 25s to 55s. It's not the nursing homes, it's community spread. It's not the university. The university's done a nice job keeping things under control over there. It's not, you know, an assault coming out of the schools because the kids are getting back in school. It's, you know, it's people getting together. And quite frankly, I know everybody's worn out, but teetering is the word I'd use. It's like we have got to be resolute and wear our masks and do those simple things we're being asked to do to keep this thing at bay. That we're on the verge of the vaccine stuff starting to be released. You know, guys, we gotta suck it up and wear our mask. It's not cute or clever to not wear a mask. You're not being brave. You're not being you know, you're being reckless, quite frankly, because, yeah, you may be young and think, I mean, you know, I'm nothing can hurt me, but you may cough on somebody that it'll kill.
All right, let's talk about the word teetering, all right? Two things that I'm going to use that word to apply. One, the one that Rex just referenced, vaccine. The CDC saying this morning the vaccine will be ready for distribution and the states need to be ready to receive it this Sunday. Second on that, by the way, and I think this is a worthy note because whenever they start putting little caveats in there, I always think the caveat might be the lead. And in this case, there are very stringent storage needs, refrigeration for this particular vaccine and transportation storage, and that's clearly something they're worried about. But they're saying, we got a vaccine, but it's not stable, is the way right. I get this. Now, let's take, you know, if I had a middle name among the people I've worked with over the years, they would call me Worst Case Scenario Miller. They would. They sometimes
a little bit of caution is not a bad thing, right?
Right. So. Yeah. You know, I don't, like I said, I don't consider it paranoia. I consider it hypervigilance. So let's take a look at the clock. And once again, the word that Rex used, teetering. Today's the 11th, went into effect at midnight. The tier two mitigations go into effect for 2 weeks. That leaves us the 25th. If the numbers are not down and they continue to grow the way they are, we will see us go to tier three. All right. Right. So you figure they give you 3 days to get ready for Tier 3. That would be the 25th. Thursday is the 26th is Thanksgiving Day. 27th is Black Friday. So that would leave us on the 28th, Saturday of this month, that we could potentially see our region, if we don't get these numbers under control, go to Tier 3. Tier 3 has much more significant impact, including your healthcare system.
Right. We are making decisions ourselves, Tom, to delay some surgeries so that we can keep beds available and what have you. We're pushing off some of the surgeries that require overnight stays. And, you know, not doing them, but just going to, we're going to push them out a couple of weeks. We're trying to mitigate that. And you know what? I honestly believe in my heart that Springfield does not want to implement that next year. They want to let the hospitals make their own decisions and stuff. And, you know, going back to my mask comment earlier, you know, we all know people that have their own little private businesses, restaurants and things like that. You know, we're disrespecting them if we don't wear the mask, because if we go to tier three and we start shutting everybody completely down again, you know, people are losing their livelihoods because of this. Yeah, it's aggravating for the hospitals. It's stressful for the staff and we'll lose money, but we won't lose our existence, whereas other people will. So if you can't do it for yourself, do it for everybody else around you.
My understanding, Rex, is you had a strident conversation with the members of the board about the essential workers that are within your system. I understand that conversation was held, I believe, 2 weeks ago.
Yeah, you know, we it's just amazing what people do and how what we're trying to do to support them. And I wish I could capture the pressure they're under and share that with everybody, because then I don't think I'd have any problems with people who would do the right thing or need to do the right thing, because they would have an appreciation for just how hard this is.
And you wanted it reflected in their paychecks.
Yes. Yeah. We, we did implement a pay increase as anything else, even despite the financial beating that we took in the spring, to send a message to our staff that we do sincerely appreciate what they're doing, and we know they're up against it. You know, they've got all the pressures everybody else does, plus then they've got to live it at work.
You know, it's interesting. I was speaking with some elected officials, and they say, you know, we're talking about money and shortages and taxes and all this. And he says, I'm going to in front of my city council. I'm going to ask for a raise for my my police and street and alley and all the people that worked hard during this. What are we talking about, cutting them when they're the ones that went? No, I think they ought to get a raise. And, you know, and so I'm curious whether that mayor will be able to achieve that. I've talked to more than one that felt that way as well. You know, after listening, I talked to Dr. Jeff Ripita yesterday. Talked to Kerry Eldridge this morning from Franklin Williamson Bi-County Health. And here I am talking to you this morning, and I'm starting to hear kind of a phrase in my own head when it comes to what we're facing here, because there are a lot of points of views. And I'm starting to think it's not your fault if you catch it, but it is your fault if you spread it.
Yeah, you know, I mean, even if you do all the right things, there's the potential you could catch it. But it is reckless not to do the right things. Tom, wear a mask. You know, we know what people, and I think we've talked about this before, what people went through in World War II and the Depression from stories from our parents and stuff. This is a walk in the park compared to what those people had to go through. It is our time to do the simple thing, which is to show respect to each other and wear a mask.
All right. Now, you're doing other things in the background that people may be unaware of. I'd like to see if you can fill me in on something here, because I'm a little vague on this. I've been reading some of this, and I'm seeing some people even talk about this with me on messaging this morning. Collecting plasma. This is a project involving. Yeah. Can you help me here, Rex? Yeah.
Well, they have that. One of the treatments is the name just jumped out of my 64-year-old head, but basically folks who have had the virus, their plasma is of value because it can help in the treatment protocols for people that are really sick. A combination of plasma therapies and remdesivir and some other drugs have been proven to be really effective for really sick patients. And, you know, as we've gone through this thing, we've learned a lot more. So there's 14,000 people in Region 5 that have tested positive. So there are something a little bit less than that, because a few people that tested positive passed away, about 300. But there are there's a large contingent of people that if you would take the time to go and donate plasma, you could really help other people that are really, really sick. Now, your own health is a particular concern as it relates to, can you even donate? I'm not clinical. I can't specify that. But I would encourage everybody in the region, please think about, if you've gone through this, to be a plasma donor, through Red Cross, so that we can develop this medicine that we need to treat our truly sick patients.
Convalescent plasma therapy.
Thank you. Thank you, Tom. I couldn't remember that to save my life. Right. Now.
And this is interesting here, because, all right, let's take a look at this. Let me see if I've got the number here, Rex. I'm pretty nut about keeping numbers around, so I am. 286 active cases in Jackson County. 36 new cases yesterday. So, hypothetically, you've got, 27 Carbondale Memorial Hospital, Jackson County? Mm-hmm. All right, so let's just say then 286 active cases. You could take those people, subtract the 27, and say they were in the hospital, they had all the symptoms, they can still help somebody else even though they were never in the hospital. Yeah. Right. I mean, it doesn't have to be somebody who was in the hospital. If you had it, period, even if you had the sniffles or were asymptomatic, you still are capable of being able to help in this respect.
Yeah, absolutely. If you had the virus, again, I'm getting a little outside my comfort zone from the clinical perspective, Tom, but if you had the virus and you have the potential to have in your plasma to be able to do that convalescent therapy to help other people that are really sick, it is a simple thing to do. I know people don't like needles, and a needle obviously would be involved, but you could save somebody who's really sick. You could save their life by doing this.
All right. So what else is going on in your medical unit that we need to be aware of right now in relationship to COVID? Because I know you've got more than one project going on. We talked about the plasma. Have you got anything else like that?
Well, you know, we're doing lots of different, whatever the state-of-the-art care is, you know, the different drugs and protocols and stuff, we're staying on top of that closely. We're monitoring the development of the vaccine so that we can be comfortable that, you know, because even as an employer, too, we have decisions to make on, you know, who we give vaccines to when they become available. We are stressing to folks, you know, the issues that, like we talked about on triaging, to please hit the, you know, use the ED when appropriate so that we can keep our different range of services available. We are titrating our surgeries so that we can keep patients, beds available. And quite frankly, to take a little bit of pressure off our staff because they're just beat up and worn out. So there's a lot of different things we're working on.
All right. If you were listening to us talk about this plasma donation, I have some new information I want to share with you. You qualify for this if you are at least 17 years old, weigh 110 pounds, and are currently in good health and have a prior verified diagnosis of C19, but are now symptom-free. All right, so if you want to help in this respect, there are ways that you can help. We have a lot of course, different points of view about masks that are coming in here, and like I said, do you have scholarly backup for the information on the masks? On the list goes this morning, but we're seeing it affect different areas. I have a report here saying one police department here in Southern Illinois asked for assistance from another police department because they have five, maybe six officers that are out with COVID. It's happening in many respects, including healthcare, which is one of the reasons why I asked Rex to join us, because we think about the patients, which rightfully so, that's the priority. But you got to have the right resources. And even in the best of times, we were constantly looking for nurses and doctors here in Southern Illinois. We're always looking for great medical talent here in Southern Illinois. But they can't help if they're ill. And this is becoming part of the problem. Because here's it's a term, community spread. But I think the impact and what maybe we've used it so much, the relevancy has been lost. Because of what it means in what sector of society it exists, and really it's just a smear across all ages, locations, and workplaces.
Right. You know, we've got approximately 170 employees right now that are off work either because of they don't feel well, COVID positive, or, you know, we're testing them and what have you. And again, it's coming from community spread. It's not, you know, it's not running through the hospitals or anything like that because we've perfected being safe on, or perfected a tough word, but, you know, are really good at with the PPE and all those kinds of things. But so we're even asking nurses who've been working in the quality departments and things like that to take some bed assignments just so that we can relieve some of our other nurses because, you know, God bless them, they're working their tails off.
170, I'll have to admit, I kind of winced when you shared that number.
Yeah, it's a lot of folks. We have 4,000 employees. And not all 170 are bedside nurses, of course, you know, it's this community spread thing. And I get it. People want to go to the birthday party, or they want to see their friends, or they want to but gang, we just got to stay strong right now.
Rex,
if people want to argue that, well, what's the information that supports wearing masks? A lot of times you're arguing with a rock at that point, Tom. And I'm sorry if that offends somebody, Tom, but wear a mask. I mean, it is the one thing we can do to keep things contained.
Rex, if I give you my mom's phone number, will you call her and tell her I'm not coming for Thanksgiving? Because she's PO'd to no end.
You know, I'm gonna let you handle that battle, though.
No, come on, buddy.
I got my own fight.
I'll give you a John A. Logan mask.
Well, you know what we're going to do with my daughter's her sister-in-law, my son-in-law's sister. They live out in Brooklyn and stuff, and they can't travel. So we're going to have Zoom Thanksgiving, right? You know, we're going to eat at the same time. We're going to Zoom people in and have some fellowship that way, and just adapt to the situation that we're in right now.
Well, my mom's upset. You know, I'm like, Mom, I don't think that's. And she's doing healthcare, right? She's had people that she's cared for who have died from COVID, and she's and she says to me, and this is I'm not the only one's heard this. Everybody's coming, and I'm like, you just explained to me why you just said it. Everybody's coming is one of the reasons why I can't come, right?
Yeah, you know, Tom, it is interesting because even though if you work in healthcare, you still want that interaction. You want your her baby. and she wants her babies around her on a special day and things like that. So that's one of the things that we struggle with as human beings, is we have to do something right now that works against what our inner nature is. But if we do it, there are still ways to interact, and that may not be the best. But this too shall pass if we do the right thing and we don't bury the region with positive cases.
All right, before I let you go, Rex, I want to take a note from someone who I know works in healthcare at the VA. And says, just wearing a mask is not going to work. A proper mask that seals your mouth and nose and is rated not or greater and has to be worn properly to be effective. Now, wearing it properly to be effective, I think, is important. He's saying if it isn't rated and worn properly, it is, in fact, worthless. And, yes, with my background, I do know what I'm talking about. That is something that I see quite a lot as well, because somebody's, you've seen it, I've seen it. So this issue, and here's my concern, especially when I try to put myself in your shoes, as we've only got about 60 seconds, is failing to deal with this now and getting these numbers down and what that impact will be in 2 weeks. Well, you figure 17 days with 3 days notice. That's one of my biggest concerns. We can deal with things pretty well here right now, but if we don't get these numbers under control, no matter what your point of view is, the governor will drop the hammer with Tier 3 mitigations. And that, going back to Tier 3, really, I'm not a fan.
No, I don't think anybody is. Quite frankly, I don't think the governor wants to do that for 1 minute. And I do appreciate the person's comment. I don't know if I completely agree with their comment. I mean, wearing a mask is helpful. Wearing the mask properly is what you got to do, and it's not hard to get the proper mask to wear. And but the governor doesn't want to do that. IDPH has been talking to the mayors and stuff down here to try to get them to, to help push this issue of take the precautions so they don't have to do that. And Springfield doesn't want to, because they know the impact on human beings. They don't want to do that.